Like, yeah, but it's a horse. It's not a monster truck that's going through there, is it?
He was on his phone. He was smoking weed and obviously in no state to be on the road, right?
I can see why some mountain bikers might be a little bit pissed off.
Exactly.
And along comes Tom Pidcock and kind of shows them how it's done.
I think it is fair to say no to either bike. I think at the point you're singling one out over the other, that's where the issue lies.
On today's Global Mountain Bike Show, are e-bikes destroying the reputation of e-mountain bikes? Some very sad news of trail closures in many parts of the world. And we're going to be joined by our resident Tour de France racer, Daniel Lloyd, who's going to be talking about the subject of...
Are roadies ruining races?
Some very sad news recently which broke on BBC News that grandmother Gloria Stevenson got killed on a zebra crossing by a teenager on an electric motorcycle. Mm. It seems that the bike was in not very good state of repair. It wasn't road legal. He was on his phone. He was smoking weed and obviously in no state to be on the road, right?
Yeah. I think what we need to pick up with that is, as you just said, it was an electric motorcycle, essentially. But a lot of the way this has been reported is that it's an e-bike.
What's the difference between an e-bike and an e-mountain bike? I mean, there are restrictions, but we'll come on to that in a bit.
Yeah.
Let's talk about e-bikes in general in city centres. I mean, they're part and parcel of the city centre. Yep. They come in many shapes and forms. You've got maybe Uber Eats or Deliveroo.
Yep.
Or, and then you've got some bikes which are clearly made professionally.
Yep.
And they've got wide tyres and they've got racks and stuff like that. But there are a lot of home-build kits, yeah, right? And I know these terrify you, Adam,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely.
And why is
terrified
that?
So, I've got to preface this. I do appreciate a proper EMTB e-bike does come at a cost, but that's been properly, purposely engineered. So it's got all the safety features on it. It's got your battery management. It's got your thermal cutouts if it gets hot when it's charging, that sort of thing. Whereas these homebrew kits don't have that. Like, there are better kits than others, but the majority I've seen bolted to, I guess, bikes that weren't designed ever to have that much weight or power put through them.
Yeah, I think it can be, and I think London Fire Brigade called for a kind of ban on lots of e-bikes and lots of kits of e-bikes, because, especially in blocks of flats, because of the fire risk of them charging. But I think this is part of the mix-up with the media referring to e-mountain bikes, e-bikes, and it's this huge coverall. And when we're talking about EMTBs, it's a different thing. I think just on the kits, there can be some really good kits available, and I think the key is that lots of those kits actually do have the torque sensors, which we're getting nerdy and techy already, but that bit's really important, as are the kind of turn of phrase of, you know, e-mountain bike and e-bike. Mm. And it's really easy if you read that headline, and it's the same, unfortunately, in quite a few different countries where e-bikes have either started to be banned or been involved in serious traffic collisions, where, we're talking about EMTB when actually it's not. It's an e-motorbike, and it's very different because it doesn't have this torque sensor. It doesn't have the pedal assist. It's having a throttle, and that's the big difference, not so much whether it's home-brewed or not.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely sort of throttle assist, but there's also the fact that there are fire hazards with some of these bikes because they're not professionally put together. No. I love the comment you mentioned a couple of days ago, the fact that you can see these bikes in city centres and the chain has not been used.
Yeah, like the regular drivetrain on the bike just doesn't move where it's got twist and go.
Yeah, that's how we kind of talk about the bikes. That's an e-bike, but it's not an EMTB.
Yeah. So, interestingly, Panorama run a story on illegal e-bikes last year.
Yeah.
And one of the comments that came across was that there's no restrictions on these e-bikes. Well, there actually are very clear restrictions on e-bikes. They're restricted to 25 kph and they're pedal assist. Those are for the bikes that we ride. They're pedal assist bikes, as you mentioned. We could transition this conversation into e-moto, because the CEO of Marin Bikes, Matt van Enkvoort, was recently on a podcast and he said that EMTBs are trending too close to e-motos. Now, this is really important because you mentioned, Owen, that, you know, the media are misreporting things, right? Mm. Well, I take issue with the fact that EMTBs are being closely matched to e-motors because they're a million miles from an e-motor.
And it's what's nuts is the perception is that, like, e-bike, it's got this restriction, but it's still basically the same thing. Like, it helps you a little bit. Now, I've read it in the comments when we've done something on e-bikes on tech. There's a lot of chat about misunderstanding what the difference is. And it's kind of, it's a shame that there's this kind of mix-up from somebody who is running a business selling e-bikes because they're hugely different.
Can we just get some facts and figures on EMTBs versus e-moto? An EMTB, some of the bikes we ride on the channel, you've got a Bosch bike or an Avanox bike. They're between 1 to 2 horsepower, right? Now, a Suron, which it seems to be that this kid was riding when he mowed down Gloria Stevenson, was on a bike which was over 20 horsepower. That's 10 times more powerful than an EMTB. I know there's the power to weight and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's also the kind of the speed restriction as well, like the motor assist cuts out on an EMTB.
Yeah. But then you move on to another e-motor, which is a Stark. I mean, loads of mountain bikers love Stark bikes. 80 horsepower. 80 horsepower, and then you've got people comparing an EMTB with an e-motor.
You just,
it's like, it's ludicrous.
Well, you said it as e-moto versus e-bike. They're two different categories, and they are worlds apart.
Do you know what? I actually want to go back to city centres, and, you know, we're talking about bikes. I think bikes are a good thing in city centres.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
They're a great, great way to get around. But then at the same time, we actually share that space with cars. You could say a Ferrari or a Rimac is up to 2,000 horsepower. And we share the space, you know, within inches of pedestrians. And nothing is really spoken about that, or the fact of the power of big lorries in city centres. So I think there is an alternative perspective to the kind of transport in city centres. Yeah. But e-bikes, EMTBs, whatever you do, it does lead on to some concerns that people in the industry have, and that's on land access. Yeah. Actually, me and Adam were in South Wales last week. I mean, South Wales is renowned for motorcycles hoying around the woods illegally, and there are crushers waiting at forestry gates to put people's brand new 350 KTMs and flatten them out.
I didn't know that.
Wow. No, but that's what they've got to do. I remember early trail centres in South Wales Valleys, which, you know, they were built because mountain biking was growing. It's growing really well. And a lot of the kind of early trail damage wasn't from other trail users, legal trail users. Mm. It wasn't the classic debate of like, oh, horses in soft conditions can damage trails, or there's, I don't know, badgers digging up trails. No, it was illegal motorbikes riding single track because the trails were really nice. So then they had to introduce more and more barriers to stop access, which then meant actually it was really hard to get into. But
actually, folks, let's talk about trail access and e-mountain bikes.
Hold on. Before we dive into trail access, I think it's really important because I feel like there's some discussion between us, but what about you out there? What's your thoughts on this topic? Do we need to stick to calling EMTBs EMTBs and not confuse stuff with e-bikes? Does the industry actually need to make a better case for EMTBs and talk about how there are restrictions and how they're not these sort of open-ended throttle assist bikes? What are your thoughts? Let us know in the comments, and now we'll get into trail access, because I think that's another huge topic which does feed off e-bikes, doesn't it? I mean, I'll actually preface it before. So there's an amazing guy, rest in peace, Jobs Brandt, who rode loads of off-road riding on a road bike, and he kind of started Tom Ritchie and Fisher off on lots of these huge epic rides. There's a book out there about him. But he really disliked mountain bikers because they were riding his trails, because there's basically nobody else where he was living. I think Palo Alto, lovely part of the world in California. There's no one else there. And then these mountain bikers started coming in, started riding on his trails. Mm. And it feels like that is an exact conversation that loads of people have about EMTBs and e-mountain bikes. Is, well, these are my trails and you're ruining access.
It's funny. I did ride a road race bike on forest tracks in the 1970s. It was a Dawes Star Celeste, 27x1¼ tyres on there. Nice. I'd come back with punctures every time. But I loved the experience.
Well, this is the thing. We've had discussions in the comments from other people of like, oh, I was doing this riding, and Steve's right, yeah, like California didn't invent... No, I never said that off-road riding was invented in Marin County in Fairfax. Right. Never said that. I said when mountain biking took off.
Okay.
It's a whole interesting debate because that's when bikes started to develop. That's when tyres and you had less flats started to develop. So off-road riding, been around for years.
Can we, a perfect transition then to a story coming out of Oregon? There's a few trail closure stories which have emerged over the past few weeks, which are quite concerning because they have repercussions for mountain bikers, you know, all over the world. And the first one's actually from the Sierra Club, which is an environmental organization in America. Now, they posted on a trail in Crater Lake. This is in Oregon. It's actually meant to be the deepest lake in the US and said to be one of the most pristine on Earth. Now, I guess mountain bikers have had a difficult time in America for many years. It's not just e-mountain bikes, but the Sierra Club actually singles out e-mountain bikers as having no access to this part of the trail in Crater Lake.
Interesting.
Now, a quick overview of the Sierra Club, founded in 1892 by a group of Californians, naturalist John Muir as his first president. He very quickly involved the club in political action to further nature conservation, but also land access. Now, what we should be talking about as mountain bikers is, should we be singling out e-mountain biking from mountain biking, or should we be, talking in union? We should have a federation of mountain biking to talk about this subject, right?
Yeah, I think there should be. I think land access is a hugely challenging issue. We're really lucky here in the UK that the land access in general is pretty good. I know it's a whole topic and I'm talking to the right / wrong person with you, Steve, about land access. But it, versus kind of in America, I know in kind of around Marin, there's trail closures happening there as well. And it's trail closures to mountain biking. There's always debate. And I think Sierra Club were quite vocal in closing trails for mountain biking too, because of kind of erosion and things like this, but they're also then still letting horses on. So it's always been a contentious issue. But yeah, the Leave No Trace thing is one of my take homes from the kind of Sierra Club, is very much go and see nature, go and enjoy this incredible space, but leave no trace, don't damage it. And I think that's where, different riding styles can lead to potentially different trail damage. Yeah. And I think there's an assumption that EMTBs are at fault.
So just to summarise the Sierra Club, they actually helped to found the National Parks and Wilderness Act.
Oh, wow.
In America. They're a massively powerful lobby group, right? Yeah. And I've thought about this notice on this trail at Crater Lake. I think fair enough. Not only do I think there should be no e-mountain bikers, I don't think there should be any mountain bikers there, because it's a national park. It should be there for peaceful recreation on foot. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Totally.
I mean, if we sort of break it down to sort of the e-bike versus the, let's just call them regular bikes for the sake of conversation, in theory, you could run the same tyre, and if you get some absolute wattage monster, you could be putting the same load into that ground as you would on the e-bike. So I think it is fair to say no to either bike. I think at the point you're singling one out over the other, that's where the issue lies.
I think it's a very contentious topic, because I know that, you know, mountain biking, thankfully we know how fantastic mountain biking can be for mental health, for physical health, for general well-being. Mountain biking, getting outside, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's not just a kind of like, it's so easy to fall into within the mountain bike industry of a new bike, new tech, oh, that's really exciting, or someone's done something incredible, a race. And I feel like we're all guilty here of falling into that. But probably the biggest take home that all of us take, and we need to project to you out there, is that mountain biking can be brilliant. It's awesome for so many people. So if there's limitations to how awesome that can be, and if you live near Crater Lake and that's your only mountain biking, it feels like that's a step back. But you're right, it feels like, Steve, that mountain biking, the industry, the kind of like the races, the media, it feels like there is a tipping point happening where we need to come together to start having a conversation about better land access. And it's not just, we'll build a trail centre, because that's a different form of mountain biking.
On the subject of trail centres, actually, there's another story emerging from northern Germany. This was reported by EMT News. And it talks of the northern Rhine-Westphalia area, and talks of a draft which is potentially extremely restrictive amendment to the forest laws in that area. I think what arises from this is that the media will jump onto mountain bikers as troublemakers in the woods.
So
we're now we're not just talking about, earlier we talked about EMTB and e-bikes, we're now talking about EMTBs and MTBs, and all being lumped together. But we should be united, shouldn't we, in trying to preserve our access? Because as mountain bikers, and I think in Germany it's even more difficult. I think the trail access in Germany is far less than we have in the UK. Mm. I mean, that's the whole thing with trail access. It differs massively all over the world.
Well, even in the UK, as a tiny island example, Wales has talked a long time about sort of like an everyman's right and a right to roam, not yet there. Scotland has the right to roam, so there is the ability to go where you want to, not necessarily ride trails wherever you want to, because potentially there isn't the infrastructure and the trails aren't ready to support that. But then in the UK, it's more restrictive, so we're restricted to certain routes. And I know, actually, kind of looping back to you talking about Crater Lake, I know in Colorado there's a Colorado Trail Race, which is done on mountain bikes. It's a popular FKT, and there's one section.
What does FKT mean?
Fastest known time.
Okay, right.
So it's a racery thing playing outdoors. I mean, that's maybe a different discussion. Should FKTs be banned?
Yeah.
Different discussion.
Let's quickly.
But it's just on this, you know, on this trail race. There's one section that moves into certain land access, and basically mountain bike wheels cannot touch the ground in this national park. So you'll have people doing the Colorado Trail Race. Correct me if it's the wrong race. I do apologise, ultra racers. But people have to have a backpack to put the bike on. It's nuts, but yeah.
If we were to summarise maybe trail access globally in maybe 1 minute, I'd say that mountain bike trail access in America seems to be warming from the vibe I get. I mean, from the land which allegedly invented mountain biking, it's good news.
Did invent it.
Folks, let's talk about Europe. I've ridden in so many amazing places in Europe, and it seems to be quite relaxed in the likes of Italy and France and Spain. Yep. Germany is more difficult. But what's your experiences of mountain bike access in those countries?
I lived in Ireland for a little bit, and it's quite fun there because at the time, it's going back over a decade, a lot of mountain biking wasn't legal. So it was really entertaining. You'd got quite a lot of good cross-country races at the time, and then got good enduro races and now good downhill races there. But there was kind of like two bike trail centres. But there was loads of mountain biking everywhere. Yeah. But
So I rode in China last year.
Nice.
Right on the edge of Shanghai. It seemed to be loads of kids riding downhill bikes, shuttling the runs there. I want to quickly talk about the UK, because as a case study for land access, because in the UK we've got trail centres, we've got bike parks, we've got bridleways, we've got private lands.
That byways.
Some people have access to. Byways. I actually took James on a byway ride last winter. But me and Adam actually went on a ride last week, and the video's coming up on EMBN this weekend, a ride across all the South Wales coalfield. Yep. I don't think I've ridden a more diverse range of trails in a short space of time in my life.
It was huge, that difference, because we had prime gravel,
Oh, you can't.
I said the G word.
We've talked about EMTB. That's dangerous enough. Now you're putting gravel in it. That's a lot of controversy.
But we had that. And then we had, like, what we both described as the best bridleway we've ever ridden.
I think it was.
It was so good.
Yeah. I mean, it was insanely technical.
It was
World Cup downhill tech. And then into the most amazing flowing single track you will ever ride.
Yep.
Ever. And then you heard it.
Some of the climbs that were listed as bridleway.
They were
tiny.
But it's a horse. It's not a monster truck that's going through there, is it?
But in terms
one horsepower.
We had everything. We had bogs, we had bracken, we had bitten legs. Yep. And to me, it was like there was the unknown of route finding, although we did have the Garmin. Yep. There was 0 meters visibility. Yep. There was riding on the urban fringe. Yep. That we met people. I think just meeting people out on the trails. And you know what? We actually bumped into this kid. There was 4 kids, actually. They're all
randomly on the trail.
They're all wearing designer sunglasses, right? So free riders wear Prada, right?
Do they?
Yeah, free riders wear Prada. And we were talking to this kid. His name was Sam Jones. He literally won the whip off at the Vantajam, right? This this is apparently the UK's premier free ride event.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he was just there on the hill sessioning on his e-mountain bike. Really cool.
Well, you know, you've got to get his practice in for those whips on e-bike.
I mean, there wasn't anything to whip on that trail, I don't think.
Well, maybe that's why he's fantastic at whipping.
We could transition into saying, well, actually, is the ride that we were doing more of a free ride than an adventure ride?
Wow.
Well, I mean, first you've got to frame free ride, because I feel like it's, I'm not doubting you, but like it's pre-you. Because free ride, first, we need to say it was a brand name and it was trademarked. In mountain biking.
Before we get into free ride debate, can we ask you guys what your thoughts are on land access between mountain biking and e-mountain biking in different parts of the world? What are your experiences of land access? I mean, I think where we rode in the South Wales Valleys is possibly the densest network of mountain bike trails in the world.
Wow. Mm.
Should we save free ride as a discussion for another day? Should we bring in Dan Lloyd to talk about...
Racing,
and the fact that did you just say that roadies are killing mountain bike racing?
I mean, that's a take. You've got some huge names from the roadside.
We're going to have Dan Lloyd in a minute. He doesn't get much bigger name than that.
That there you go. You said it.
Let's get Dan Lloyd in. Now, to help us dive into the last topic of this show, which Owen has titled, Are Roadies Killing MTB? We've got a man who is no stranger to tarmac, having raced in the Tour de France and also having raced in the World Mountain Bike Championships in Sierra Nevada in 2000, Daniel Lloyd.
Just the 26 years ago. Yeah, not many people actually know I represented Great Britain at a proper mountain bike world champs.
Those legs have seen some action, that's for sure.
Yeah. And on the bike too.
And on the bike. Owen, do you want to take a debate with this hot topic?
Yeah, it's a hot topic. It's a bit controversial, but I figured we've seen race winners at Novomesto who've done well on the road. I'm talking about Pidcock specifically, but I could have talked, well, in previous years about Puck Petersey, and other races. But are roadies who are just stepping into mountain biking, are they ruining the racing? Because there's been this UCI rule change a couple of years ago. It felt like it almost was just for Pidcock and for Matthew van der Poel, but we've had this rule change where, opposed to having to amass some UCI points to race at World Cups, it's just carte blanche where they can just turn up and rock up to race. And is it ruining the racing?
I'm going to do my usual sitting on the fence, but also giving perspectives from both sides.
Great.
So I can see why some mountain bikers might be a little bit pissed off, shall we say, because they're fully dedicated to the sport, training for it specifically all year.
Exactly.
And then along comes Tom Pidcock and kind of shows them how it's done on one day, having done a lot of the road races in the early season and then returning to road racing ahead of the Tour de France. So I'm not going to say it's embarrassing, but like I said, probably quite frustrating for them. But on the other side of the fence, I'm sure that when Tom Pidcock races or Mathieu van der Poel or these big names that come across from the road, they must draw in a bigger audience, I would have thought, because you've still got the mountain bike diehards that want to watch the race. Plus, you're going to get people like me that think, oh, I wonder how so-and-so is going to get on against the mountain bikers this weekend. So I'll tune in as well. And I'm sure many more roadies do exactly the same thing as me. I mean, I've been comparing it in my brain to what I experience watching cyclocross each winter.
Okay. Yeah.
Because where we have the likes of Van Aert, Van der Poel and Pidcock, they need a rest at the end of the road season, which carries on until mid-October. So they start their cross campaign a little bit later than the diehard crosses. But you're watching the early season thinking, I know I'm not watching the best cyclocross riders in the world. And so it doesn't feel quite the same to me until those big three turn up. The diehard crosses will say, yeah, but we've been racing for a couple of months now. Yeah. We're starting to feel the fatigue. They've come in extremely fresh, well-trained. They are better, but of course we're going to lose in that scenario. So I guess it's not dissimilar on the mountain bike. I guess you could both tell me what the feeling is from the spectators, the fans and the riders when somebody comes in.
Oh, and you suggested that they do it because mountain biking is cooler and is more fun, right?
Well, it must be, because like, if you're a pro roadie, why would you risk? Good example would be last year at Novomeste. There was a lot of hype, a lot of excitement that this road pro was coming over, and it's like, oh, it's probably like Putt Pizzi. I've had a chat with her in the pit. She's really good. She's really nice. No, it was some other guy called Matthew, apparently, big name. Anyway, he took the risk of racing, crashed, and I assume then set back his you know, his proper job, his day job as a road racer. So, yeah, is it because it's fun?
Well, going to that specific example, it's interesting actually that Van der Poel keeps doing it, because he hasn't been as successful in cross-country mountain biking as Pidcock, who seems to be able to just pick up his mountain bike, go to a World Cup, and either finish right up there or quite generally win it. Whereas Van der Poel has definitely not had it his own way. Can't even remember the last time he won a big mountain bike race, but he still wants to keep doing it. And the reason he wants to keep doing it is because he finds it fun. It keeps his career feeling a bit fresh, and if he just solely focused on the road. Is it cool? I mean, I guess they're doing some whips and table tops, but at the same time, they're still racing in lycra skin suits.
Yeah, so, do you know
how
that
cool can it really be?
Dan, can I pick you up on that? I mean, it seems, you know, mountain biking is a relatively young sport. I mean, road cycling has been around for, well, you can tell me how long is it? 150
years? Well, over 100
years. Well, 100 years. So I think it seems to me that cross-country racers or mountain bikers in general, they've nailed down the nutrition, they've got the fitness sorted, the bikes are now incredibly developed. And so it did come across to me that the race in the weekend, it seemed like the likes of Pidcock were having fun. And ironically, it's the roadies who are styling it up.
Oh, no, like Bjorn Riley, who also did some whips and jumps and stuff. He's a proper mountain biker too. But yeah, Pidcock was doing cool tricks, which was the juxtaposition, I guess, growing up in the kind of 90s for me. One of the reasons why I'm not very good at downhill, but there was more appreciation or excitement because it seemed cooler, even though all of racing can be cool.
Dan Lloyd, do you ride mountain bikes still?
I haven't ridden a mountain bike for a long time, actually, Steve.
All right.
I did have a cross-country one, and I broke it, and I've not replaced it since.
Wow.
But I think, you know, things have developed so much from the time that I was racing. I'd like to do cross-country still, but, you know, I actually also have done a couple of downhill mountain bike races. Did I tell you that?
No.
I'd love to hear this story.
I did one at Checkenden, which at the time, as you remember, the downhills were basically the longest downhill from the cross-country course. That's what Checkenden was. It had this tiny little start ramp, which I came off. I didn't even manage to ride straight down the start ramp, went to this left. You got two runs at a time, went around the first left-hander and just wiped out completely. Second run, top 10.
Wow. Okay.
Then I went
and
did one
top 10
then I went and did one at Corfe Castle.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
which
yeah.
Which was I'd describe as more of a proper dangerous downhill, and I stacked it. I hit the bottom of my back and couldn't race the next day. And my dad said that you need to choose one or the other, and that's going to be cross country.
So there
that was the end of my downhill career.
Can I actually talk about the danger side of things? Because I remember George North is famously into mountain biking, but he was restricted from riding mountain biking because he played for Wales, British Lions, and the Ospreys. Are there the same restrictions with road cyclists doing mountain biking?
There might be. I mean, I know there's definitely restrictions for most pro riders in terms of doing like cross country or downhill skiing for understandable reasons.
Oh, right.
At the same time, a lot of Scandinavians who've grown up cross country skiing and for whom it's easier to keep fit and train over the winter, they'll be allowed to do it because they've got the skills there. And I'd imagine it's the same on the sort of mountain bike front. You know, Van der Poel, Puk Pizza, Tom Pidcock, they've just grown up doing jumps and wheelies and all of the skills that you gain very quickly when you're a child that you wouldn't do if you picked up mountain biking as a 30-year-old roadie. So that's why they're allowed to do it, because much less chance of doing some serious damage.
I feel like there's it's a French road team. It's a famous video, not because it's a French road team, but there's a guy, Bradley Wiggins, doing a bit of cyclocross. He'd never done it. And there's kind of this great shot of him being interviewed crashing in the background. You're kind of like, okay, maybe that's why.
Yeah, he was rubbish, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What do you guys think, though? Like, when the likes of Pidcock... Puk Pizza's not such a good example because she's always been, like, multidisciplined, concentrating on all three somehow. But Pidcock does just come in every now and again and kind of seems to show them who's boss. What is the sentiment amongst mountain bikers and the community when that happens?
I think I guess I get grumpy in the fact that I'm just kind of like, he's a roadie coming in. There's been this rule change specifically. It feels kind of like I'm own kind of like juxtaposition because I'm kind of like PFP, Puck, Mariana Vos, who did cross over from road and do mountain bike as well. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Because for a long time, it felt like road pro cycling. It didn't have the kind of... it wasn't as equal, whereas now there is some more equality. There is a kind of like women's Tour de Femme. Mm. There is the kind of bigger races, whereas in mountain biking, it felt like there was more big races. So I was like, oh, that's okay. But for the male road races, I was a bit like, just either stick to road or stick properly to mountain biking. But then when Tom wins, I'm kind of like, actually, he does it quite stylishly. And I think I'm just grumpy about a really big Dutch guy who just smashes it.
I think mountain biking has always relied on characters coming into the sport. I mean, such as Dan Lloyd.
Agreed, yeah.
So I made a quick exit from mountain biking. You need to have character for this sport. I'll go to the road.
But, you know, you got like some Sean Palmer, you know, a snowboarder came into the sport. I'm really excited when Pidcock and Co.
Julie Furtado, she came in from skiing effects and road race too.
I think it's great to have personalities come in to do it. And I remember, you know, kind of watch, even when you watch Pidcock descending, you're like, wow, that guy has got some insane bike skills.
I think he has claimed that he would do well in mountain bike.
I've heard that, this quote.
That definitely ruffled some feathers, quite rightly so, because I'd be like, you what?
No, I had the same reaction. And then I saw him riding with Greg Minnar and I was like,
really?
Yeah. He can actually ride really, really well on a downhill bike. Because I was like, you've got carried away a bit there, pal. But unfortunately, it might match up. But that'd be interesting. Yeah. Pinarello needs to do a downhill bike. Exciting. That'd be good.
Do we need to talk about money? You mentioned earlier that they might be doing it for money.
I think that's the other thing, isn't it? You've got racers like Nino who did cross over, but there's also a kind of legacy of kind of like Evans and another XC pros, Ryder Hesjedal, loads of road racers who've then, XC racers who've moved to road because that's where the money was. Yeah. So, is it the same?
That's definitely the reason.
Yeah,
I don't know how much Pidcock's earning, but it's likely to be 5 to 6 million euros a year, and he wouldn't be able to earn that on the mountain bike, obviously. I would have a guess that if he could earn 6 million euros a year just doing mountain biking, he probably would. I really get the sense that he absolutely loves mountain biking and off-road disciplines and having fun from that point of view, and that road racing is much more of a chore for him. I mean, he doesn't like going for the general classification, for example, in road racing, because he just finds it boring to have to, you know, save energy wherever you can, not attack when it's stupid to do so. Yeah. He did it last year at the Welter and came third, so he's an unbelievable talent.
Wow. Okay.
But I think he just wants to have fun on a bike, but you want to earn the money where you can, whilst you can, right?
Well, Daniel, it's certainly not been boring having you on the show. Folks, let us know what your thoughts are of roadies racing in mountain bike events, and also those subjects we talked about in this week's show about e-bikes and e-mountain bikes, and the subject of trail access, which we'll pick up on next time.